Learning Michtam Eliyahu, the first volume, in the Hebrew on page 2. We're starting on page 2 of the actual book. The essay we started in the last class is titled Ha'oishev Ascha Bo'ilam Hazeh, Happiness and Reward in this World. And the explanation we said, what we said up to in the last class, we said that surely everyone is looking for happiness in this world. That's simple. Everyone wants to be happy in this world. And seemingly, the definition of happiness would be that a person can reach whatever he desires. Whatever he desires, he has. He's able to acquire it. He's able to acquire it. And that is a source of happiness to him. The ability to acquire the happiness that he wants. The analogy we could give, the person who's extremely thirsty, very, very thirsty, very dry, and he's drinking a glass of water. So as the water is filling this need, there's a joy. There's an actual joy. And the minute that his thirst is quenched, so then the water is tasteless. He has no desire to drink water. When a person has a real, very strong thirst, and he drinks, that's pleasurable, because you're filling a desire. So you're getting what you want. What you want right now, what you desire right now is this water. So therefore, that's filling that desire. That moment, those moments are moments of happiness. That would be a simple way of achieving happiness. But we're not always just thirsty for water. We want many more things than just glasses of water. So therefore, that's our definition. Whatever that a person reaches, whatever it is that he wants. And we ask the question, if that's the formula and if that's what everyone wants, how come is it that people don't reach this happiness? In fact, we went through different classes of people. We looked at the very wealthy last week, and we spoke about the middle class, we spoke about the working class, and we asked, are any of these groups really happy? And the answer seemed to be that no one is really happy. And therefore the question becomes, what has Hashem done to us that He's created this very marvelous world, but where no one is happy? On the contrary, everyone is miserable, everyone is suffering from all sorts of anguish, all sorts of pain, all sorts of disappointment and inability to get what they want. Basically, everyone in the world is troubled by his situation, that it's not the way he'd like it to be. So therefore, what is it that Hashem has done for us? And what we began to answer was that there must be something wrong which is holding us up. In other words, the potential for happiness is certainly in this world, but there's something that's holding us up. And just like a doctor cannot heal a sick patient unless he first diagnoses what the problem is, he has to understand the problem. Once he understands the problem, so then he can prescribe a medication. But there first must be the diagnosis. So similarly also, we have to find out what's wrong. As if this world contains such potential for happiness, what's wrong with us that we are unable to be happy? That's the question. So in the text here, we're starting with the very last paragraph. Davazeh mefurish hu bedivrei chachamim amitim. This issue, this problem, what the problem is, as we said before, we have to diagnose the problem. The problem is explained by our true sages who have pointed towards the problem. They've actually pointed their fingers to the actual problem and they've identified it. Right, the true sages of the sages of the Torah, Mefurishu v'Mishnah, have written explicitly in the Mishnah, Hakina v'Hataiva v'Hakovid Mutzin Es Odom Min Ha'Olam, that it's jealousy, the feelings of jealousy, the feelings that of inadequacy because of what other people have that I don't have. So it's this, the pursuit of calming my own jealousy. Or taiva, lust, the pursuit of lusts, fulfilling self-indulgence, fulfilling all of my physical lusts, things that I lust for physically, whether it's food, whether it's drink, whether it's luxury items or other types of physical lusts. So it's the pursuit of jealousy, lust, and covet, and honor. Honor means that I should be recognized by others, I should be famous, I should be acknowledged, I should be applauded, I should be admired and approved of and accepted. I want everyone to accept me. Everyone should love me. Everyone should admire me. So the pursuit of these desires are what take a person out of this world. We're still going to have to explain this, but this is what the sages have said, right? It's jealousy, it's lust, and it's the pursuit of honor which destroys a person completely. The world as Hashem has created it is a happy world. It's just that we have left the world of happiness. Right? We take ourselves out of the world of happiness, and we put ourselves into a world of suffering through these three forces, which we spoke about before, the kina, tive, and kovah, the desires, right? Jealousy and lust and honor-seeking. We take ourselves from the world of happiness into a world of suffering through these three forces, which have taken us out. This is like the chute, right? That's the slide that slides you from one reality to another reality. These are the three slides. If a person can flee, he can avoid, run away from the desire for the jealousy and the lust and the honor, which is to say that he's able to expel them from his heart. Right? Feelings of jealousy and the lust, etc. If he can expel these desires from his heart, he will remedy his own world, his own private world, which is himself, his own life, his surroundings, etc., his personal world. And his world will be filled with joy from end to end. If you can just get rid of these three problem areas, these three psychological problems or emotional problems, whatever you want to call them, so he will be totally filled with joy. Not only will he have happiness, oisha with an aleph, but he'll also have oisha with an ayin, with a good ayin, with a good eye. A good eye is a generous eye, an eye that sees goodness in everything. That's what's called to have a good eye. So the word ayin, the letter ayin, is also means eye in English. So therefore, it's oisha with an ayin is wealth. Not only will he be happy, he'll also be wealthy. Ka'amra zal, as our rabbis have taught, ezu oshir, who is wealthy, hasameach bechelkoi, someone who is happy with his lot, with what he's happy with what he's got. What he's got is exactly what he wants. So therefore, he lacks nothing. He's absolutely happy with his lot. So he is considered wealthy. That's the definition of wealthy. Ve'omruki gamhu oshir. The rabbis didn't say he's also happy. Someone who's happy with his lot is also happy. Is also rich. Excuse me. Again, the rabbis say who's wealthy? The person who's happy with his lot. So they didn't say he's also wealthy. The person who's happy with his lot is also happy. That's not what they said. V'loi omru ki oshir godlhu, he is happy. This is the only one who's happy. Ki oshir godlhu, he is the one who's happy. V'loi omru ki oshir godlhu, they didn't say he's very wealthy. Ela omru ki rakhu oshir, they said only he is happy. Only the person who's happy with his lot is happy. Ezu oshir, this is the one who's happy. The Zulosa and someone else, anyone who doesn't fit this definition of being happy with his lot, lo raksha eino oisha, not only is he unhappy, aval oisha eino, he's not wealthy either. So excuse me, who is wealthy, the one who's happy with his lot? Only the one who's happy with his lot is considered wealthy. And anyone else is not considered wealthy. Anyone who is dissatisfied with what he has is not happy. Right? But who the reason is, Mishum de'ezu oni, who is considered a pauper, ze'ashe'yechseloi, a pauper is someone who's lacking, who's missing something. So therefore he's needy. Need means he's in need. There's something missing from his life. What he desires, he doesn't have. So he's called needy. He's in need. So he's a needy person. Right, and when we look at it carefully, we clarify, we'll think about it carefully, we'll see that much more than what is lacking wealth from a pauper, right, is what's lacking to a moneyed person, his second desires, his secondary desires, all of the other things that he wants. That's what a rich person lacks is sometimes very, very much more than what a poor person lacks. A pauper cries out for bread because he's hungry. The minute you give him bread, he's happy. Oh, he's crying out, he's hungry, I'm hungry, I'm hungry. So he can't think of anything else. He's hungry. Oh, yeah, I'm so hungry. So you give him a slice of bread, or you give him a half a loaf of bread, and he's happy. How much does a half a loaf of bread cost you? A few shekels, a few pennies. But the rich person is crying out, give me honor, give me distinction, give me fame, let me be the president, let me be this. So he's crying out for honor. He wants everyone to applaud him, to recognize him, to admire him. Or he wants his lusts to be fulfilled. He's got desires that cannot be fulfilled. You can't just buy them at the corner store for a few pennies, right? What he wants are massive things, and he can never reach them. So therefore it comes up, the rich person is much more needy than the poor person. The poor person's need can be met with a few dollars. But the rich person's needs, which are these intangible needs of honor, of recognition, and of having all of his lusts fulfilled, every type of lust, every type of taste and every type of flavor of this world, it becomes impossible. You can't possibly fill all of his lusts. Person who reaches the age of 60 and he wants to be 20, he can't fulfill that. I mean, you know, they can give him a face job, and they can staple his stomach. I don't know what they can do to him, but they can't. He wants things that he can't have, so therefore he's in need. He remains miserable because he really wants these things, and they're inaccessible. You see, every person has wants. So what do they want? So sometimes they want, you know, they want their kids to speak to them, and the kids don't phone them anymore. Whatever it is that they want and they don't have becomes their source of pain. So we're going to see, 1 minute, let's just see this through. Im nistaka b'kol echad mehem kafi ma shehu magish es atzmoi. If we look at each one of them according to the way he feels concerning himself, not to look with the eyes of the pauper on the wealthy person. Because you see, the pauper wants some money. So he looks at the rich person. The rich person's got millions. So he's convinced that that's happiness. Because what he wants is what the other one has. Right? But it's not what the rich person wants. It's not what the poor man thinks the rich person wants, right? What the rich person wants is really something totally different from what the poor person wants. The poor person would like the money of the rich man, but the rich man has a whole set of different desires of inaccessible items that he wants for himself.
It's like the bread.
Right. Mm-hmm. Both of them in a bad way. Each one feels his own personal pain, right? The own aching of his heart. Because life is very evil and bitter to him. He's not getting what he wants. He can't get what he wants. And therefore, only someone who has no lacking, someone who feels, I'm not lacking anything, I have exactly what I need, exactly what I want, everything I want I have, only he can be a wealthy person. Because only he is not needy. Someone who has all that he wants is happy, is rich. Only he can be rich. Right, and not anyone else. Bishum poni. Only the person who's lacking nothing can be rich. Well, me who's there. So who can such a person be? Who can possibly have all that he wants? Kamu, like we said, ze shigiresh haritzoynus hashiifu shel olam hazeh milivoy. It's the person who has expelled the desires and the drives for this world from his heart. Right. If he no longer has desires and ambitions and drives for the pleasures of this world, so then he has all that he wants, because if he's got his basic needs, right, he's got a roof over his head, he has what to eat, and he has clothing to wear, and he's got what to do during the day. So then if he doesn't want more than that, so then he is the wealthy person. Achen im kein, halo ein boy sheif of ein boy merits. Now the question is as follows. However, if this is so, and seemingly such a person has no drives and no ambitions. Right. If a person says, what I've got in this world, right, my house and my clothing and my food, etc., what I have is all that I want, so then isn't this a person without any drives or ambitions? Right? If he says, I have all that I want, so doesn't that mean he's without drives, without ambitions? Bli ambitio, bli energia, without ambitions, without energies. A person without any ambitions, can we call him alive? When he has everything he wants, surely there's nothing to live for, because he's got it all. If really a person can, as we said before, expel from his heart the desires which we call kina, taiva, kova, jealousy and lust and honor seeking,
So then there's this person. He has no ambitions, no drives. So is he called alive? Surely old, the very, very old people are close to passing away from the world, right? So you surely can't call them happy, right? They just, you know, what do you need? I don't need anything. What, you want something to eat? No, I can't eat. You want a drink? No, I can't drink. What can I give you? You want, you know, I'm warm enough, I'm cool enough. I don't have energy to do anything. So surely those people aren't happy. He has no wants. Personally has no wants. Surely that person's not happy. Because how can you be happy if you have no drives, no ambitions? So the explanation is as follows. We need another step to get the whole picture. And shum oisha gashmi ba'ilam. There can be no material happiness in this world. Material happiness cannot satisfy you. Right? Because as we said before, if you've got 100, you want 200. If you have 200, you want 400. It's impossible. You can never reach it. Like we said in the beginning, no person dies from this world with half of what he wants of this world in his hands. It's just impossible. Whatever you've got, you always want more. So therefore, there cannot be happiness in terms of material happiness in this world. Rak oisha ruchni, but there can be spiritual happiness. Right? Mi ishahu oshir beruchni, someone who is spiritually wealthy, hu amusha. Someone who is spiritually wealthy, he is the one who is happy. V'loi acher b'shum ponim, and no one else at all. And this is what we see, that true Torah people, true people who live truly Torah lives, where Torah lives are there, not just externally, but they truly live Torah lives with Torah drives, Torah ambitions, Torah hopes. Those who have placed all of their thoughts and all of their desires and all of their lusts, the heart, the desires of their hearts and their ambitions in terms of the Torah lifestyle, in terms of acquiring Torah according to the wisdom of the Torah, the wisdom of Torah living, they are the ones who are truly happy. And not just in the next world. Those who make spiritual goals, their desires, not just in the next world, ela poshut ba'olam hazeh, simply in this world. Bevada misha ein boi shi'ifa, ein boi merit, einenu musha. Certainly, someone who has no drives, someone who has no ambitions, someone who's got no get up and go, he's rushing to try and get something, he's hoping for something, he's working towards something. Certainly such a person who doesn't have drives and ambitions is not happy. A person with no drives and ambitions is not happy. You have to have something you're working towards. We all have to be working towards something, right? And someone who has nothing that he's working towards is not happy. Because having ambition and having a drive and having hopes, these are the foundation of happiness. The foundation of happiness is that you're working towards something that you want. This is life. Of Amos. So when is this possible? Shashifus mismalus, when it's desires which can be filled. When it's desires which you can fill, kasha'ein amilu toli biyadachem, which means that filling them doesn't depend on others. If the desire we have is a desire that can be filled. Right? So the simple example was the glass of water. You can fill up a glass with water and you can drink it and that will quench your thirst. So then that's a complete happiness. Your wish has been completely fulfilled. So similarly with spiritual goals, which are not dependent on other people. We don't need other people to furnish us with our needs. We don't need other people to applaud us. We don't need other people to smile at us. We don't need other people to give us money. When it's not dependent on others, it's totally dependent on our own efforts. And what we're driving for is something that's totally accessible, which is closeness to Hashem. Coming closer to Hashem, getting to know Hashem better, getting to understand Hashem better. This is all within our grasp. These are ambitions that are reachable. So if these are our ambitions, so then this is the total formula for happiness. Because we're working towards something that's achievable, and we're getting there, and it's fulfilling our needs as we get closer. So we're happier, and there's further. There's further advances a person can make spiritually speaking, because as we move closer to Hashem, so we see further greatness that we can reach for, that can be ours. Hashem Yismale Blikina Redifus Hakov. And this is a type of ambition, a drive that we can fill without jealousy. It doesn't depend on what's happening by my neighbor, what's happening by him, what's happening by her. It's totally independent of jealousy. Redifus Hakov. I don't need recognition. I'm not looking for recognition from others. I'm looking for personal achievement. I'm looking to becoming closer to Hashem. I don't need other people to see me coming closer to Hashem. I don't need other people to be photographing me and putting my picture in the magazines, in the newspapers, putting them on the walls. That's not what I want. What I want is personally to becoming closer to Hashem. And this is something that's achieved, right? So it's independent of other people's approval, independent of other people's applaud. Just to say, when our drives come from a love of Torah, a love of wisdom, a love of discipline, self-control, self-growth, personal growth. Shiva kazu miluya tolei achbonu. Such a drive is totally dependent on us. It's only we can do it for ourselves. This is something we do for ourselves. Kol Hashem narbe b'meretz, v'narbe b'shifa, yirbe oshreinu. And the more drive we have, and the more ambition we have, will increase our happiness. The more we're doing to come closer to Hashem, and the more we want to come closer to Hashem, the more happy we'll be. In other words, we have a goal to reach. We have a challenge to meet. And this is our joy. We will be the ones who are truly happy in this world. And this is exactly what the Mishnah says. Kachi darka shel Torah. This is the way of the Torah. Pas v'melech teichal. It says eat bread with salt. V'chule, etc. Right? You eat bread with salt. Eat small, drink little measures of water. Sleep even on the ground. Pirush, which means, what does it mean? This is the life of Torah, to eat bread with salt and water and to lie on the ground. What does that mean? It means like this, Imuchan ata gam lezeh, miroiv cheshkecha b'teh, which means that you are prepared to sacrifice all of the physical, material comforts because your desire for Torah is so great. As you so want to come close to Torah that you're prepared to forego any other types of happiness. Imagine a person who wants to visit his Rebbe, and he's prepared to sleep in the floor in the corridor because he's getting what he wants. He's prepared to give up everything else just to get this spiritual closeness that he wants. So therefore, if a person that his ambition for spiritual gains is so great that his whole material pursuit becomes insignificant and therefore doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter what he eats, it doesn't matter where he sleeps, it doesn't matter what clothes he has, none of that becomes important to him anymore. So then that means that the other drive is very, very great. Right? If you have a tremendous ambition for spirituality, so that means you have a very low ambition for physical, material comforts. As al kol panim beinim osher tiyeh b'momon or im gam oni ashrecha b'olam hazeh. Then, regardless of whether you're materially wealthy, a person who's physically rich, someone who's actually rich, moneyed, or even if he's poor, he's going to be happy in this world. Because he's working towards what he wants, and the other desires, the material achievements, are totally unimportant to him. Couldn't care less. So therefore, it's like, doesn't bother him. You know, everyone's got new shoes, new hats, whatever it is. He couldn't care less. He's totally unconcerned. Right? He's totally. I mean, he doesn't have holes in his shoes, but he's totally unconcerned. That is his drive. So therefore, that's his happiness. So that is happiness in this world. He is striving towards what he really wants, and which is something which is achievable. This is the formula. Atahu amusha ba'ilam hazeh, v'lo acher b'shum ponim. This is the person who's happy in this world, and no one else, under any circumstances. Only this is the only formula. A person is driving, has ambitions, he's working towards something which is an intangible, something which is a spiritual achievement. These are the true issues when it comes to achieving happiness in this world. Before we leave this essay, I just want to quickly give an analogy, a beautiful analogy, which helps us to understand many things. The analogy is as follows. Let's say we have a mountain climber, and he wants to climb the highest mountain in the world. He wants to climb Everest. Right? Everest is his dream. He's going to climb Everest. So he goes out there to wherever it is, and he starts climbing. And it's difficult. It's very, very difficult. You know, if it's not If it was easy, then anyone could do it. Right? So it's very difficult. There's no elevator going up to the top of Everest. You know, it's not climbing stairs. It's very, very difficult. But that difficulty itself is what he wants, because that's how he's proving himself. The harder it is, the more he's proving himself. Right? If it was easy, he wouldn't be proving himself. So therefore, he faces a difficulty, which is hard, which is uncomfortable, and is painful. Maybe it might even be scary. Right? But he's happy with the difficulty, because that, with overcoming that difficulty, working to overcome that difficulty, will be meeting the challenge, will be his success. So he has difficulties, but he's happy with the difficulties. He has problems, but he's happy with the problems, because these problems are his special challenge, and overcoming this challenge is his success. Right? A person who has no problems in life has nothing to overcome. So what's he happy about? He doesn't have an Everest to climb. He just has to sit in his backyard and count the cars driving by, right? And listen to the crickets chirping in the grass. Right? A person who has nothing to do all day. So, you know, he wanders around the house with his hands in his pockets and he jingles his small change and he has nothing to do. So therefore, that's death. To live like that without any drives of ambitions is death. But someone who has challenges and he's trying to overcome the challenges. So therefore, on the contrary, when they're more difficult, it's more of a challenge and it's more of an accomplishment. Right? The harder the mountain is, the more of the accomplishment of climbing that mountain. So that's true for us also. We all have problems. Of course we have problems. Right, for these problems we believe are heaven sent to us. And overcoming the problems, right? Someone insulted me, someone stepped on my toe, someone, right, those financial problems or health problems or problems with kids, right? Kids are not living the way we want them to live, etc., etc. All of these problems are challenges, and when we will overcome these challenges, we're climbing our Everest, our own personal Everest. We're climbing our Everest. We're getting closer. So these can all be, this is all included in the spiritual goals. Striving towards reaching spiritual goals is the source of happiness in this world, because it's only through striving we can be happy, and it's only if they're spiritual goals that they can be filling. Because material goals are just like salt water. The more you drink, the thirstier you are. So therefore you don't achieve anything. And we know a person who's stranded in the ocean, the worst thing he can do is to start drinking salt water. The minute he starts drinking seawater, that's it. He's finished. He's dead. He's going to die very, very soon. So therefore, if you're in an ocean, there's salt water all around you. Right? The material pleasures of life are all around us. If we start indulging in them because we feel that that's going to fulfill our thirst, so then we're in big trouble. That's really destroys us, because, again, as we said before, a person has 100, wants 200. He has 200, wants 400. It's impossible. We must have spiritual goals. We must be striving for spiritual goals. And the greater our goals, and the more we strive, and the more we're focused on reaching our spiritual goals, the happier we are in this world. Regardless, and besides the world to come, and the reward of the world to come, we're happier in this world. Okay, let's start the next essay. The next essay on page 4 is called Schar Mitzvah Be'olam Hazeh, the reward of a mitzvah in this world. Amru Chazal, our sages say, is the Gemara in Kiddushin, Schar Mitzvah Be'hai Al Maleka, the reward of a mitzvah is not in this world. Right? There is no reward for a mitzvah in this world. V'lechoira Apei Rishu. Seemingly, what does this mean? Seemingly, the explanation is she'ein meshalmim la'odim etzchah mitzvah she'yase. They don't pay. The heavens don't pay us out the reward for the mitzvah that we did. Mahalma in this world, kischaro ito lo'ilam haba. The reward has been kept for us for the world to come. That's the simple explanation. There's no reward for a mitzvah in this world because they don't pay us in this world. They pay us in the next world. You have to wait when you get there. It's being invested for you in your account. You have an account in the next world. They opened an account for you in the bank, in the heavenly banks. And every time you do a mitzvah, they make a deposit in that bank. And that's waiting for you. When you get to the world to come, you'll spend that money. Right here in this world, you don't get paid for your mitzvahs. That is the seemingly simple explanation of this chazal. Amnam ha'inya amu'ik mu'oid. Now here comes a very classical piece of Rav Dess. It's a well-known piece. You've probably heard this before. But we're going to see it in the text inside, and it's very, very beautiful. The idea is much deeper. The idea of there's no reward for a mitzvah in this world is really a much deeper idea. It's proper, it's fitting that we should explain this correctly. It's important that we explain this correctly. What does it mean, there's no reward for a mitzvah in this world? What does it really mean? There's no reward for a mitzvah in this world. Amru Chazal, our sages have said, Yofisha achas shel keiris ruach b'ilam habo. Right, more pleasant, more wonderful is a single moment of pleasantness in the world to come, mikol chayo ilam hazeh, than the entire life of this world. A moment of the pleasantness, the keiris ruach of the world to come, is more than all of the life of this world. Gam dov zeh sot biu vizbun. Now this teaching also needs to be understood and thought about. Right? Again, it's saying one moment, a single moment, right? A second, even a second, less than a second, a moment of pleasure of the world to come is more than the entirety of the joy of this world. So this we're going to explain as follows. Echetzi legolus v'zeh ma shezechisi lishmoya mi admoi maran tzvi hirsh broide zetzal. Moiri chami. It's his father-in-law. He heard from his father-in-law the following explanation. Tzvi Hirsh Broidy, who was a son, I think, of the Alter of Kiln. So this is how he explains this idea of one moment of pleasantness of the world to come is more than this entire world. Hu Piresh, he explained, Ki inyan kol chayu ilam azehu, nikabit el toch rega achas. Right? The explanation of all of the life of this world means, if we could gather, if we could condense into a single moment, it's called shoyis v'zragoyim shul oishav enachas shiyesh l'odom, all of the hours and moments of happiness and joy and nachas, right? Nachas is feeling good feelings of this world, which a person has throughout the length of his life. We could condense all of the moments of happiness of an entire person's life. Imagine your whole life, right? Whatever it is, 120 years of joy, all the joyous occasions could be extracted through the days of your life, and all of them condensed into a single moment. Now, that's of your life. And in addition, if we were to add to that all of the happiness and the joy of all of your friends, all your acquaintances, right? We take all the moments of happiness of your life. We join to that all the moments of happiness of your friends and acquaintances' lives throughout their entire lives. We condense all of this into a single moment in this world. We can give the single moment of joy to one person and let him experience that one moment of joy. Would it be possible to measure the level of happiness he would feel? It would be something unbelievable, right? All of the moments of joy of all of his and his friends and his family's life, all condensed into a single moment, it would be impossible to imagine the type of joy he would feel. To feel in that moment. However, this is not yet the full explanation. Because we're going to add to this moment, we're going to add to this moment of joy all of the joy of all the people of his town, right? His town, maybe he has 20,000 people in his town, or maybe, right, he lives in Bangladesh, he has a couple of million people in his town. If we could add together all the moments of joy of all the people of his town where he lives for all of their lives, all of those moments of joy throughout each one of their lives, all condensed into one moment, and we're going to add to this not only of all the joy of all the people of his town, but all the people of all the joy of they've experienced all of the towns throughout his country, and every single country right through the world, which means all of the joy of all the inhabitants of the world throughout the entire lifetimes, all condensed and given to a single person in a single moment. All of them, one moment to one person. This is not yet all of the joy of this world. Why not? Because all of the joy of this world, all of the life of this world will be in we'd have to add together all of the happiness of all of the generations From the beginning of creation until the end of time, all of the people of all of the world, right from the beginning of time to the end of time, end of this world, from the beginning of the world to the end of the world, Hakol Mamish, Kol Tov Olam Hazeh, Bli Shum Yoytzi Min HaKlal, if we give all of this joy of the world to come, without any exception, everyone is included, the joy of everyone has been gathered together, Hakol Yinosen Le'odem Echod Berega Achas Mamish, all is given to one person in one moment, this would be the ultimate joy of this world. That would be the ultimate experience. There can be no great experience. It's all of the experiences put into a single moment. And even so, the joy of the world to come is greater. So that's step one, right? Greater is one moment of joy of the world to come more than all of this world. Now, what does it mean, the pleasantness of the world to come? The expression used here is koiras ruach. Ruach just means an aroma. It's the pleasantness of an aroma of the world to come. The level of the pleasant aroma of the world to come, he explains, you could see a suda simcha gedola. If you could imagine a great banquet, right? Someone's making a big banquet, the base melochim, a big banquet in a king's palace. The king of the town, the king of the country is having a big banquet. And a pauper walks by the palace, the mansion of the king. There's this big banquet inside, and a pauper is in the street, walks past the palace, and as he walks past, a certain aroma wafts. He smells the banquet. It's just a waft of the scent of the banquet comes through the windows. And he gets his pleasure from that smell, for that momentary aroma. This would be called koiras ruach. It's just the aroma of the world to come. Just the waft of the aroma of the world to come is what the mission is describing. Which is to say, simply in the world to come, if a person doesn't actually merit the world to come. We're talking about a person, let's say, who didn't merit, he didn't manage to get into the world to come. He didn't merit the world to come itself. What they permit him is just to pass outside and just to get a waft of the aroma of the world to come. The world which has been prepared for the tzaddikim, they allow him to just get a waft of it. This is the explanation of someone who enjoys the aroma of the world to come. Which is to say, just the aroma of the world to come, and not the world to come itself. In other words, the smallest possible reward of the world to come. Right, that's what we're contrasting with the greatest possible joy of this world, in contrast to the smallest possible reward of the world to come. And perforce this must be for the very smallest mitzvah, where there's no mitzvah smaller than that. Right? The very, very smallest mitzvah it's possible to do, which is almost no trouble involved in it, and there's almost no effort, and it's a very insignificant thing, and makes a very insignificant, at the most, but it's still a mitzvah. The very, very smallest of the mitzvah of the world to come, which we would understand would have the very smallest reward in the world to come. Because every single mitzvah carries reward in the world to come. There is no mitzvah that doesn't have its reward in the world to come. So therefore each mitzvah would have its reward. And the greater mitzvahs would have greater rewards. The smaller mitzvahs, smaller rewards. So therefore, if we can imagine, the very, very smallest mitzvah would get the very, very smallest reward. So therefore we would say that all of the pleasures of this world, all, as we said before, multiplied and condensed into a single moment of all the people of the world, through the time, through all time, in a single second, all of that cannot reach the waft of the aroma of the pleasure of the world to come. It just can't. It doesn't reach it. It's just as much, it's like you put 10 million ladders, one on top of the other, they just don't get to the heavens. You can't reach it. It's just beyond all reach. So that's what we mean, that all of the pleasures in this world, all the life of this world, cannot reach even the smallest, very, very smallest pleasure of the world to come. So we've now explained very clearly Kischa mitzvah b'hai al-malek. And that's what we mean when we say the reward of the mitzvah is not in this world. It's just not here. It's just, it can't be fit into this world. If Hashem wanted to pay us for the smallest mitzvah, He just couldn't bring it into this world. And this is because there is no mitzvah amongst all of the mitzvahs. Even the very smallest mitzvah. And that is because there is no mitzvah, as small as it is, that its reward is much, much more than any type of pleasure or benefit that it's possible to bestow on a person in this world. Just, you can't pay him. Right? Just not in this world. Just beyond this world. Okay? It's like you're trying to fit an elephant into an ant hole. Yeah? A little hole in the ground where the ants go in and out. Yeah? They make a little hole. So we're going to squeeze an elephant into that, right? So just destroy the whole thing. You destroy the whole ant heap you're trying to push in there, right? So the same thing, you cannot get the reward of a mitzvah into this world. It's just totally beyond this world. And that's literally the meaning of the reward of the mitzvah is not in this world. There cannot be in this entire world what is a possibility, what exists in potential, schar mitzvah, i.e. the reward of a mitzvah, v'afilu mitzvah yoyse ktani, even for the very, very smallest mitzvah. I once heard an analogy also of a person who gets onto the bus, right, with a $10 million check, right, and that's all he's got. He says to the bus keeper, "Listen, I'm sorry, I can't pay for the fare because all I have is this $10 million check." He says, "Well, maybe you can cash it for me."
Right? Sure.
So the bus, the bus driver kicks him off the bus. That's it. So he's got all this tremendous reward, but sorry, you can't get on the bus. In other words, you also have to have bus fare. Okay, so we need our basic needs in this world, obviously, but at the same time, we don't want to lose the opportunity of gaining the very, very great reward of the world to come, which is our true wealth and our true future, and it's much more than just bus fare, right? Bus fare helps you get from A to B. From Yerushalayim to Bnei Brak, it helps you to get. But that's only because you're going there to do a mitzvah. You're going there to come closer to Hashem. You only all the travels and all of the actions of this world, we're only doing as part of our task of coming closer to Hashem, as we mentioned in the last essay. We just kind of, it's our mountain that we're climbing. It's our Everest, right? All of the small details of this world. That's all our climbing of the mountain. The reward is the world to come that we'll reach, and that's something that's way, way beyond, and there is no room in this world at all for any type of reward. Even the smallest reward for the smallest mitzvah is much, much more than this world.